an apparent ambush as they responded to a fire in a mountain community. KREM-TV reporter Regan Gallo.
Local law enforcement received reports of a fire, which then they responded to, and those firefighters did receive shots fired at them. And two of those deaths we have been able to confirm, but there's still an unknown amount of casualties.
Kootenai County Sheriff Robert Norris says his deputies have been taking sniper fire, and they've been unable to help others who might be injured.
We might have civilians that are stuck or in shock on that mountain. So this is a very, very fresh situation.
Norris says he's prepared for a lengthy standoff.
If these individuals are not neutralized quickly, this is going to be likely a multi-day operation.
The FBI and ATF are now on the scene. CBS News Special Report. I'm Christopher Cruz.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, scattered showers and storms with a low around 65. For Monday, partly sunny, highs near 80, an afternoon storm possible. Clearing out Monday night with a low around 60 degrees. Sunny and breezy for Tuesday, highs near 80, 82 Wednesday.
Currently, 69 degrees.
Old Dutch potato chips, Old Dutch, the snappy chips. Crispy, crunchy, light and snappy, Old Dutch potato chips.
Old Dutch, the crispiest, Old Dutch, the tastiest. Crispy, crunchy, light and snappy, Old Dutch potato chips.
Welcome to Masters of Mystery, brought to you by Old Dutch Foods and recorded before a live audience.
Old Dutch potato chips.
Old Dutch, the snappy chips. Crispy, crunchy, light and snappy, Old Dutch potato chips.
Fans of perilous mysteries and chilling thrillers gathered together in the mystery room at Lucky's 13 Pub in lovely downtown Mendota, Minnesota. Each month, the country's greatest crime writers are summoned as we dissect their literary murders, disclose their writing journeys, and perhaps persuade them to divulge the secrets behind their captivating plots. So, dear listener, settle into your comfiest armchair with your favorite Old Dutch snack and prepare to be enthralled as you are immersed in the minds of the masters of mystery. Here's your host, Rob Young.
Tonight marks the halfway point of our first year of broadcasting Masters of Mystery, and I'd like to thank each of you for your enthusiastic support. Masters of Mystery is now being broadcast in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and South Dakota, and we hope to add more stations in more states by the end of the year. Here's a preview of some of the guest authors we have coming in the future. Next month, veteran St. Paul thriller writers Brian Luderman and Christopher Vallon will be our guests, followed in August by South African crime writer Stanley Trollope and New York historical fiction author Anna Marie Alfieri. And in our never-ending effort to bring you the best authors, later in the year, best-selling Chicago mystery writer Tracy Clark will be in conversation with Guthrie Theater mystery director Tracy Emden. Our 2026 schedule includes such outstanding authors as David Housewright, Laurie Rader Day, and Craig Johnson of Longmire fame. So please keep listening as we endeavor to bring you the top mystery thriller authors in conversation with the most interesting people. Now it's time to introduce tonight's guest authors, Katrina Monroe and Kathleen West. Katrina is a novelist, a mom, and a private investigator. So you can just imagine what kind of stuff she can write. She is our local Stephanie Plum. I hesitate to point it out, but Katrina is a bit peculiar. She prefers to eat with her fingers, yells at the most inopportune times, and often forgets to focus on important things like dinner and putting on pants. She is also the queen of the snarky comment. And did I mention she lives in Minneapolis with her wife, who's here, two children, and a ghost named Eddie. We will have to find out more about Eddie later. If it wasn't for the fact that she was an author and a private investigator, which gives her cover for her behavior, she'd probably be institutionalized. Luckily, she's not, so she can be with us here tonight. Kathleen's background is a bit more traditional. She's a school teacher for more than 20 years, and she says she lives in Minneapolis with her A-plus family and three B-minus dogs. They should meet Eddie the ghost, I think. Her past book titles reflect the whimsy with which she approaches her craft. Are we there yet? Every time I say that, I want to go,
is it time?
Or minor dramas and other catastrophes are among her most recent works. But she has now gone to the dark side, and she's become a mystery writer. Her next book, Making Friends Can Be Murder, will be released in June. It's a charming, cozy mystery that addresses the deeper themes of identity, loyalty, and forgiveness. And in the words of best-selling author Stephanie Robel, never has murder been so heartwarming. Ladies and gentlemen, as they take their seats on the high chairs, let's give a warm welcome to Kathleen West and Katrina Monroe.
So much. This is already my favorite event ever. So much personality and what a crowd. This is just the best. So thanks for having us. And I'm so excited to talk to Katrina about her third book, Through the Midnight Door. There it is. But I feel like we should start with Eddie, perhaps. Can you just give us okay, so we got an introduction to you and your pants wearing habits, but could you just tell us, if you just meet someone on the street, how do you introduce yourself?
Oh, I don't.
Okay, you hide. If you have to, you're at...
If okay. I have to, I just, I'm Katrina. If they ask what I do, I balance between, okay, do I want to have the PI talk or do I want to have the writer talk? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of depends. I err toward private investigator mm-hmm. because people find that more interesting and they won't ask me if I've written anything they've read.
Okay, fair enough. And when I read your bio, Katrina, I was so fascinated by the PI part of the bio. I mean, has anyone ever met a PI in real life before? I had not.
You have now.
So I asked you this a little bit at dinner, but I think everyone would want to know, how did you get into the business?
So I was working at a pharmacy, hated my job. And so I do as everyone does. I got very drunk on the couch and scrolled Indeed on my phone, just trying to find something else, anything else that sounded cool. And I found a listing for someone who wanted an administrative assistant for a PI firm. And I said, that sounds like the start to a book. Apply. So I did, thinking I would not get the job. The universe laughs, and I got the job. And then a year later, I started taking my own investigations. I've been doing it for about 5 years now.
That's amazing. And was the interview normal, a regular job interview?
It was, apart from the fact that my hair was blue at the time.
Okay. But that seems perfect, actually.
Yeah, I can't tell if it helped or hindered.
Did they ask you, what's your weakness in normal interview questions?
Yes, only because the person interviewing me was an attorney.
Okay. Okay. I have more questions about the PI angle, but I also think you should give us a little elevator pitch for Through the Midnight Door, your most recent book.
Yeah. So Through the Midnight Door is my third book. It is probably my favorite of the three because it is a book that I wrote with my sisters in mind, who are my absolute best friends in the world. Also my worst enemies. I have never been bitten so many times as I have been by my sisters. And that's including my children. So I wrote this book as kind of an homage to that relationship, being really close with your sisters, but also kind of what happens when you and your sisters drift apart and you don't talk about the thing that you really should talk about because it's this deep, dark, awful thing that happened in the past. But we don't talk about it because if we were to talk about it, we would have to talk about it. No one wants to talk about it. So that is my book.
Wow. Okay, but the sisters in this book are super dysfunctional.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I did dedicate it to my actual sisters, who are not nearly as dysfunctional, but they, they read an early copy and asked immediately, which one am I? So.
Okay. Well, let's give everyone a little taste of it. Will you read just a little bit of the beginning?
Sure.
Okay.
And I was warned in an email not to curse, so I will make a silly sound for those particular words.
For the radio audience, we're not allowed to say swear
yes.
words.
And in two pages, there are a couple, weirdly, so. Rain pummeled Meg's car, dripping onto her shoulder and thigh through the gap in the window that never closed properly. The air was hot and humid, thick as soup. Her car's ancient air conditioner only managed to pump out enough cold, burnt-smelling air to fog up the windshield. Every mile or so, she leaned hard against the steering wheel, the sleeve of her Indiana University sweatshirt tucked around her hand, and tried to wipe the fog clear. With the pressure of the wheel on her chest, she imagined a car careening through every intersection. It would hit her head on, driving the wheel into her body. Her ribs would crack like twigs and her head would whip forward into the dash. It'd be a race between choking on her broken teeth, sorry people still eating, and the wheel crushing her heart. And even if neither was enough to kill her right away, the metal shrapnel in her belly, the shrapnel she wouldn't feel until after the shock had worn off, would eventually. But this was Blacklick. A town just big enough and old enough and don't meh with me enough to not have been absorbed by one of its neighboring cities at the tail end of the industrial age. This time of night, everyone was either in bed or leaning over some bar at last call, stinking of booze and fryer grease. She hadn't seen headlights for ages, doubted she would at all. Still, she held onto those bleak thoughts, imagined in painful detail the way her body would jerk and fly, a rain-soaked rag doll to be found by some poor blank hole who'd slept it off in the parking lot. Thinking about the blood and the pain was better than thinking about the phone call that put her on the road in the first place. Cruiser lights flickered in the distance, and soon she came upon a cop pulled over to the side of the road behind a dark-colored truck. She couldn't tell if someone was inside, didn't care. Still, she slowed as she drove past. If she got pulled over, precious time would be wasted. She would be too late. She slipped her phone upright into the cup holder. It'd be sticky with spilled coffee later, but that wasn't important. She kept shooting worried glances at the thing, expecting it to ring, to pick it up and hear a stranger's voice on the other end. I'm so sorry. She shook her head, focused on the road that was barely visible for more than a few feet in front of her. There would be no phone call, no apologetic stranger, because Meg was on her way. She pressed a little harder on the accelerator, white-knuckling the wheel as she felt her back-end fishtail a little. Come on, old girl, she thought. Keep it together. Almost there.
Yes. So I think we can hear the quality of the writing right away. I love a good sentence, and there are so many good sentences in the book. And you can also hear right away that it has like a horror element. I am not experienced in horror very much. I'm very sensitive.
None of us are.
And I have like categories of questions. And the first category I wrote was about the horror genre. And sure. I wanted to know, like, how did you, this book also, like, if you're a mystery fan, there is some really good mystery in here. You find out a lot of secrets as we go. There's two dead sisters and all the intertwining threads of that. You don't find out who killed them and why until the very end. So it has a lot of traditional mystery elements, but it also has a lot of like really dark and kind of gross and appealing horror.
Gross and appealing. Yeah. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
So I wanted to know, like, did you always want to write horror? What is your personal history with the genre? What led you to this?
Yeah, absolutely not. This is like a theme with me now. I do everything on accident. Okay. I just fall into things. The book I wrote that became my first novel, They Drown Our Daughters, was actually a book about a mermaid because... Oh. Obviously, I love mermaids.
Yes.
But it died on submission, as books tend to do. And this editor at Poison Pen Press came to us a year later and said, I can't stop thinking about this book. What if we made it a ghost story instead? And I said, sure. Are you going to pay me? The answer was yes. And so I said, great, I will give you the best ghost story you've ever had. What I didn't realize through that process is that a lot of my favorite writers, Jennifer McMahon at the top of the list, is one of those writers who kind of balances that line a little bit, where she writes a mystery, but they tend to have gothic, ghosty sort of elements to it. And I gravitate toward that. I didn't know that it was called horror, though, or I didn't know to kind of make that connection, because to me, horror has always been Stephen King, full stop. So knowing that you could, number one, be a woman, write a story about women, and it be super creepy, you can call it horror, sign me up. I was all about it.
There's all this really interesting earthy imagery in the book that... Like the choking on your own teeth after...
Again, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, but there's a lot of that in there. And I started to wonder if this is a convention of horror. Like that kind of like sort of surprising but graphic imagery is always part of it. And how much of it is symbolic and how much of it is supposed to be real to the characters. Do you know what I mean?
I think the answer is a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think it's supposed to live... in the character's reality, but I think it's supposed to evoke, you know, different feelings for the reader depending. Ooh, yes.
Ooh, that's perfect.
That's thunder for anyone who can't hear. I'm here. I've arrived. Mm-hmm. So it toes the line a little bit. It just kind of depends on who's reading the book. I compare a lot of my work to Shirley Jackson because she did a very similar thing where everything is very not jump scares, not, you know, overly gory, just eerie and unsettling.
We'll be back for more Masters of Mystery after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Breaking sports radio show news coming across the ticker in a move for the ages. 105.5 WIRI has traded for playmakers. Join us 4 to 5 Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Hit us in the numbers by calling with your sports takes and feelings. We'll have James, Randy, Michael, and Seth bringing you local sports coverage and news that you won't hear anywhere else. Thanks to our friends at Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods. Be heard 4 to 5 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on 105.5 WIRI's newest roster edition, Playmakers. We speak sports.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
It's no mystery where you find the best munchies. It's under the Old Dutch windmill at your favorite snack store. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or reading your favorite mystery, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back, sleuths and savants. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
And you also have a very disturbing villain in this book. And a lot of characters with villainous traits.
Right.
Donnie seems to me to be the real villain of the story.
He is one of them. Okay. I will say that. Okay. There are several villains in the story depending on whose head you're in, I suppose. And that's the way I like to write. Not every character or not every person is entirely good or entirely bad. I really like to play in those gray areas where some people may do overtly evil things, but the more you learn about them and the more you understand their motivations, you start to think, well, maybe I understand it a little bit. Maybe I get it a little bit. And that's that gray area that I think is really prevalent in the horror genre as well.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Like, are your villains, are they bad people at the core? Because a lot of the imagery would suggest that they're very dark and bad, like in their hearts and souls. But then they are complex, as you said.
Well, I guess it depends on what you consider bad.
Yeah.
I think that all of the characters have a very specifically something about themselves that they find unforgivable to themselves, but are not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I love a character that has more to give than just sunshine and rainbows and maybe an occasional murder. You know, you need more than that. Murder's great. But you need more than that.
Yeah. Do you find yourself... So I just wrote my first mystery, and while I was writing it, I did have to be, like, my editor was like, you have to make your murderer, like, bad. She actually killed someone. But do you feel like, nice. Can you understand? You've never killed anyone, I assume.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay. But when you're writing about the murderers, like, how much empathy are you feeling? This is like a question I'm asking as a writer new to the genre.
A lot.
Okay.
I think a story is only as good as your bad guy. If you don't have a really compelling bad guy, they don't even have to be very thrilling in and of themselves, but they have to have something about them. They have to have a little bit of, you know, a little charm, a little something that makes readers want to know about them. And even if it's not charm, they just have to have something odd about them. For example, my favorite villain of all time, I don't know if anyone has seen the BBC version of Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
That Moriarty is probably my favorite villain of all time because he's so nuts. But he's nuts in a way that when he pontificates and he talks and he tells you about why he does things, you're like nodding like, yeah, no, I totally get it, man. That's crazy, but it's cool and I'm into it. I love that kind of thing. So I try to incorporate a little bit of that into every bad guy, you know?
I think that I'm thinking about it now, and I just read this book this week, and all of the characters have these villainous traits to them. Is this a horror thing, or are you pretty certain that everybody has this sort of like capability for darkness?
I think it's just a me thing. I'm going to get tarred and feathered for this. I don't read a lot of horror.
Okay.
I didn't read a lot of horror up until this point. I read primarily mystery novels that masqueraded as horror in the night when no one was looking.
This book really is a mystery novel, but then all of a sudden you'll get this like creature. And the creature is dark and bad and touches the people and interacts with them in a way that actually impacts them physically. So I was wondering as I was reading it, like how much of that is, again, real to the characters or in their neuroses?
So I've never met a metaphor that I didn't love.
Okay.
I love writing things that can be one thing to me, 20 different things to other people. My favorite thing in the world is when someone will come to me and be like, oh, did this mean? And I'm like, yep.
Mm-hmm. It did.
Yep.
For sure.
Totally. For sure. Did it mean that to you? Cool. Yes, then it does.
Okay.
Yeah, I write with the intention that it will be metaphorical and vague because it's easy. Writers in the room will go, yes, easy is good. But also because I think that a book is, you know, it's kind of a push and pull between reader and writer. So if I give room for the reader to interpret whatever it is that they need to get from that character, be it villain or not, then I've done my job.
Okay. Well, I found myself hoping as I read this book that the scary shadow creature was not real because she was. And I think, well, there are a couple, but I think she.
Oh, well, then it's definitely real then.
Okay. Okay, good.
It's coming for you tonight.
But, oh, God.
It's under your bed.
And it's raining outside and my husband's out of town.
Yeah, okay, it's under your bed. KK, she's staying with you.
Yeah, KK can stay with me. Okay, before I ask you some more about the content of the book and your sisters and how they inspired these characters, I would like to know about Eddie, your ghost in your house.
Yeah, Eddie's great. Eddie is the adult that I cannot be because he is a very conscientious ghost. I do not turn off my light in my office ever for any reason, but I will leave the office to go do whatever it is that I need to do when I come back and the light is off. Great, cool. Also, my space heater also off. Thank you. No fires today.
And it's not Crystal? Crystal didn't do it?
No, she's not home. I'm home alone all day.
Okay.
So it's a great time. Me and the ghost, we have a really good time. There are candles that will go out when there is not a breath of wind to be found. Things that I will walk around loudly in the house proclaiming, where in the heck is this thing? I can't find it. I'm so annoyed. And I turn around and there it is. And it's the ghost.
Has he been there the whole time?
How do you know followed us from Eddie? He followed us from our apartment.
Okay.
We bought our house in North Minneapolis a few years ago. And when we left our apartment, we had a ghost there as well. Our child, when he was 6 or 7, give or take, named the ghost Eddie. And as children are wont to do with ghosts, we just go, yes, Eddie, that is your name. And we asked him when we moved, like, you can come with if you want, because better the devil you know than the devil you don't, right? So I'm like, come on. Come hang out. And he came. And it was great.
Have you ever like hired a psychic medium or anyone to talk to Eddie?
No, because I don't want to learn that Eddie is mean.
Okay.
So I just want to know that Eddie is my good light switch ghost.
Okay. So you can kind of see like the person or like the person behind this kind of book with these sisters and this haunting. And it's spooky. I was wondering about haunting again, real or symbolic, but it seems real to me.
Yeah. I am. Okay. Show of hands, just because who believes in ghosts?
I do, but I've never seen one.
Okay. Yes. I like it. That's a good enough amount. All right. I am not crazy. Cool. I like it.
No, you're not crazy.
Awesome.
What about your real sisters? Because these sisters in the book, I'll just tell the audience, like, the family is hugely dysfunctional.
Yes.
A major trauma happened and they literally packed it in the basement and didn't tell the youngest child about it so that she discovers it later. They never speak of it. And everyone acts like that is what happened. They're all really messed up.
Yeah.
So, and this is inspired by your real family. How much are you willing to share?
They're not here, right?
Okay. Yeah. They might listen to the radio station.
They might. Yeah. That's all right. So my sisters themselves are not dysfunctional people. They're actually more functional than I am, to be honest. One of them is just passed her boards to be a nurse anesthesiologist. She is very smart. My other one has a couple of master's degrees in music composition and violin playing. They are very intelligent, capable humans. When we get together, however... My wife likes to refer to it as the power of three. I don't know if anyone is familiar with Charmed. But we immediately resort to being 9 or 10 years old, crawling on top of each other. There's biting. There's yelling. It is a vicious cycle of playful aggression, okay. I guess. But it is because we have lived through, without getting into specifics, just because I don't want to cry, frankly. We've been through a lot together, and that is how we kind of deal with it. We have created this world of our own between the three of us that there is no judgment. If there's anger, we let it out, and we just let it out in a way we were never allowed to when we were younger. If I have a problem with one of them, I tell them. They do the same to me. I convinced them after several years to finally move to Minnesota from Florida after 10 years. Thank goodness. But yeah, we just kind of work out our own thing in our own little world. And a lot of that is kind of relayed in the book, that concept of burying it in the basement. In Florida, you don't have basements, we have swamps. So we put it in the swamp. and then we kind of moved on with our lives. There's a lot we still don't talk about, just because that's what therapy is for. So we dump it on them and then we come back happy, enjoying our time.
So it's kind of the opposite of the sisters in the book who really can't talk to each other about anything real.
Yeah. Yes and no. There was a time for a couple of years where we were not as close as we once were and how we are now. I don't even really know the specifics of what was going on in all of our lives. It just, we all kind of fell into our own little worlds and everything was too much and not enough at the same time. And we didn't talk. And if we talked, then we blamed each other for things because we were all just so angry about things all the time. And then one of us got therapy. I'm not the one. Two of us just decided to get therapy by proxy and say, "What did she tell you about mom?" No, but did you tell her about the time? Okay, so what did she say, though? Does she think? No, she said, okay, so she messed up. Cool. Yes, we agree. So we started slowly speaking, working things out, and now I cannot imagine my life without them.
That's really cool. And I don't think it's too much. Well, I don't want to spoil any of the ending because sometimes people don't like that, but I will say it's a very satisfying ending. So you do like tie up a lot of the...
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think that is something that is kind of, it's not prevalent enough in kind of the horror genre where it's, people like to leave vague endings because they think it's scarier, but I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think the important part of horror, or really any genre fiction, especially in really difficult, trying times, it's the responsibility of the author to say, look at all of these horrible things these characters have gone through. Yes, I did that to them. Yes, I took immense joy in it. However, at the end, everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
It may not be okay now, but it will be okay. And that is something I personally find important.
We'll be back after a word from your local station.
From newspaper to radio to magazine to podcast, the way we get our information has grown, and now so has Midday Magazine. Our longtime beloved show has grown to become the Rapids Report. Now exclusively available online, listen at 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, where it's streaming at WFHR.com. Catch up on previous episodes and spread the word. Midday Magazine is now the Rapids Report, streaming weekdays at 4 at WFHR.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ashley, and I want to talk to you about your business. Are you a business owner who lies awake at night worried about your business uncertainties? Do you know who your target audience is or how to reach them? Don't waste another night's sleep. Call me at 715-496-0710 so I can show you the tools and information you need. We offer radio, digital, and streaming services that will help you stand out. With my education and experience, I'll help you create a solid plan tailored for your business. Because cookie cutters are for the holidays, not for business needs. Call today and let those uncertainties melt away. 715-496-0710.
At WFHR and WIRI, our advertisers are part of our family, so come join the family by calling Ashley today at 715-496-0710.
This is Beth, host of The Kitchen's Open. Have you ever found yourself asking,
what's a good recipe for cookies my kids will love?
How do I avoid giving my guests food poisoning?
How would a restaurant chef prepare this meal?
If so, then tune into The Kitchen's Open, the show within the morning show each Monday morning at the start of the 10 o'clock hour. I'll tackle topics, teach techniques, or tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners. The Kitchen's Open. We'll tell you something good.
Potato chips, kettle chips, ripple chips, or maybe popcorn, or puffcorn or pretzels. Old Dutch makes them and a whole lot more. Your snack cravings can be satisfied by grabbing a bag, box, or jar of your favorite at your favorite store. Just look for the Old Dutch windmill. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a holiday gathering or lounging at the beach, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
I want to ask you some questions about your process, but before we move into that, I do want to ask you about your relationship with paranoia. There's a lot of paranoia in the book.
How much time we got? I don't think I'm a very paranoid person. I guess it's a byproduct of my day job that I have to be
seriously. And I do kind of want to know some stories about your day job too, if you feel like just sprinkling some in.
I don't know if I could sprinkle, but at the end we can kind of talk about. I can't give specifics, but I can give some fun stuff, just to close us out from all of this dark sister stuff. But I'm not paranoid. I think I am just right. And it has served me more often than not, so I'm just going to keep thinking that.
Okay. Well, Katrina and I have the same agent, which is how we know each other. And I think there are a lot of writers, or like, I hate to say aspiring writers, because if we're writing, then we're writers.
Facts.
But like writers who are seeking publication, I get the sense that there are a few in the audience. So could you talk about like your journey to publication? And you mentioned a little bit during our dinner beforehand that that was not a smooth road.
It was not. I am a very instant gratification kind of person, so this is the wrong job for me. But I still do it because I love it. I started writing when I was very, very young. Probably the first memory I have of writing is when I was probably second or third grade, and I was writing a story about a little girl who got abducted by a leprechaun, but it was a happy story. And she got taken out the window to someplace far away. I was the eldest of six children. I wanted to get the heck out of my house, no matter what happened. So, and I remember my babysitter, Maria, at the time, showing me how to use quotation marks. And that was kind of my first time writing something down and trying to do it the right way. And then what followed were a few decades of doing things very terribly. I wrote a lot of books trying very hard to be other authors. I will, and if you tell anyone, I will find you. I can, that's my job. I wrote a really horrible beat-for-beat ripoff of Twilight.
Oh, sweet. Does that still exist someplace?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Burned every copy. I called it Eternal, and they didn't play baseball. They played football because I grew up in Florida. Go Bucks. So, yeah, okay. I did a lot of trying to be other authors, but I think through my conversations with other writers that's kind of how you do it. Mm-hmm. You pretend to be other people until you go, wait a minute, none of these shoes fit. I need to find another pair of shoes. And it took me a couple of decades to find the right pair of shoes, and I did it. And then I put out a couple of books by myself, did some books through small press, and I was not happy still because I like attention. So I wanted more people reading my books and talking about it and telling me how awful they are, because that's how I do. And then I finally met Joanna, and she found me in the slush pile, and the rest is a very winding road of history.
Yeah. Joanna is our agent. So yes, and I am from the slush pile as well. They actually do read their slush pile.
I promise.
Yeah. Let's see. When you're writing your books, what is your process like? Do you sit down, you have an outline, you go from front to back?
Sorry.
Or you have your regular beta readers? Like, take us through it. Like, how long did this book take to write? And what were the stages?
So I can, I know the beginning, mostly. I know the end, pretty much. I know who the characters are because I need to know who it is that I'm messing with a little bit. But how they get from A to B is anyone's guess. I just start. And if I finish, then it's a book.
This was really interesting to me because I did that for my first couple books, kind of. But then I tried to write a mystery and I was like, oh, you actually have to know, like, who knows what when. But how did you do it then?
Lots of editing.
Okay.
a lot of authors call their first, like a lot of pantsers call their first draft, like their discovery draft. Mm-hmm. And I hold really tightly to that. I am very precious about my ideas, not because I think anyone's going to steal them. If you do, it's probably for you anyway. So go for it. If I tell someone the idea, then the magic is gone.
Oh, interesting.
It has to exist only in my head where it is perfect and wonderful. And it's going to be great. And I'm so excited about it. But the second I tell someone about it, I've made this mistake with our agent more than one time where I'm like, I'm writing this book. And she's like, that sounds great. And then immediately after I send the email, I go, no, I'm not.
It's gone.
It's gone. I don't know anymore. But for me personally, that is a very important part of my creative process. Okay. Is I have to keep it to myself until I have a complete first draft. And then I will usually say to one of my critique partners, or I'll tell Joanna, hey, I wrote this thing. Do you think maybe this will sell to somebody?
Interesting.
Okay. Most of the time she says, yeah.
So I think we probably have some indie authors in the audience. Like, now that you've done both, what do you think? Like, what would you advise a new mystery writer or an established mystery writer to do in terms of deciding between a traditional publishing deal and an indie situation?
I guess it kind of depends on how controlling you are deep down. Mm-hmm. If you feel that you want to have a hand in the title, in the cover, in the editing, you don't want anyone to tell you, you know, your story should be something different, or you need to change the point of view, or, you know, anything like that, do the indie route. Mm-hmm. Because if you want that control, you want to feel like you want to put in the work for all of that, because it takes hours and hours and hours of time. If you want to do that, indie is great. I, however, am of the mind that I wrote the book. You figure it out. So,
speaking of title and cover, like, how did this title and cover come to be? And the bubbles. Can you talk about that?
So
there's little bubbles coming out.
I'm not really sure about the bubbles, to be honest. Okay. This is just my guess.
There are no bubbles in the book, as far as I know.
Not a single. There's rain in the first scene, so I think that's what they're going for, maybe. Excuse me. But when we published my first book, They Drown Our Daughters, I should have brought a cover. There is a girl with bubbles coming out of her mouth because she is meant to be drowning. We came back with the only cover note to the cover designer. Joanna agreed, hey, can we have more bubbles?
Oh, funny. So now you have extra bubbles.
Now I feel like this is just like a little poke. Here's your bubbles.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can
think
of.
That's awesome.
As far as titles are concerned, I did not pick my title for my first or second book. Through the Midnight Door, is the only title that I came up with. I'm normally not very good at titles. The whole process is you have a list, the publisher provides a list, your agent provides a list. Everyone has lists of titles that they think would be great or just things they came up with Googling, like title for a book. And you throw it in there and they go through all of these testing groups and they tell you which one sounds great. My second book, I'm separated enough from it now that Graveyard of Lost Children. There are no lost children, there's no graveyard.
Oh.
I don't really understand why that's the title, except that it performed really well in testing. So
interesting.
That is publishing in a nutshell, yeah. I feel like traditional publishing. Just whatever tests well is what's going to happen. Sometimes you have a lot of control and sometimes none. This cover, my only note was, please, no carriages on the front. Same thing for my second one. No carriages on the front. I'm not trying to get confused with Rosemary's Baby because that's not what this is. It's something totally different. But of course, when they came back with the mock-ups, one of them had a carriage on it. I was like, please God, no. I'm begging you, no.
But there is no carriage in them.
No.
There is a house that does sort of function as its own character. And the town that you write also functions as its own character. I've noticed I'm not a huge horror person, but I have noticed in the horror that I've read that is a common convention. What do you think?
The haunted house?
The haunted house and the haunted town, like the town as its own character.
Yeah, I think there's something really enjoyably unsettling. That's a thing now, yeah. I guess. Enjoyably unsettling about a creepy house or a creepy town, because we've all driven through one. We've all been in a creepy house, you know, even if it's just like a museum you walk through and you go, there is something weird. Mm-hmm. About this house. It's so separated from our normal day-to-day lives, or a creepy town that is so separated from our day-to-day lives, that you have to imagine, number one, the history that's there, what possibly could have happened there. Lots of murder, promise. So it's really easy to take that kind of setting and cultivate those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super interesting. Okay. Now, I want to know about the private investigation and whether or not that has...
It's what everyone's been waiting for.
Whether or not that has influenced or you've put any aspects of it into your books. What can you tell us? And what have you signed forms that you're not allowed to tell us about?
Signed a lot of NDAs in my life. So, to kind of... As it relates to my book, I'm a very stubborn person. So I was trying very hard, just because everyone asked me, when are you going to write a PI book? I went, never! Because you keep asking about it. Leave me alone. It's my day job. I don't want to incorporate it. And then I went and wrote a book about a mom PI that's currently on submission. So fingers crossed that happens for me. Most of the time, the only bits of my job that actually make it into the books are some of the horrible things that I've come across that people have done.
That people have done.
Yeah. Names are put away to... protect the not so innocent, but
can you tell
protect
us about,
my job.
Okay. So when you started as the, I'm just interested in this. Doesn't this sound like a TV show where like she worked in the pharmacy and then gets hired with the blue hair?
I feel like it is a TV show. What is that show that everyone wanted me to watch about the really smart woman who's a cleaner and ends up working for the, I don't know. High potential. Yeah.
See, it is.
They've stolen my life.
Okay. But can you tell us about like your first case? Like are you like the young gumshoe and then the boss comes in and is like, hey, I've got one for you, and puts it on your desk? Is it like that?
I work in a company that is mostly women. We have our research division and our field division. I work in the research division, so I am an expert Googler.
Oh my gosh.
If you need to find anything, I swear to you, I'll find it in less than an hour. And then sometimes I will work with our field division, not frequently.
Do you wear disguises?
I'm behind a computer, so yes. I'm in my pajamas. I could wear disguises. No one would know. It would be great fun. But occasionally we do crosswork. I have to be really careful not to get into specifics. So if I'm maddeningly vague, I apologize.
We'll be back for more Masters of Mystery after a word from our sponsors.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
An unsuspecting driver at a Milwaukee barbershop.
I got an apprentice here shadowing me. I'm gonna put this hot towel on, man. About a good 3 minutes, all right?
The apprentice is Donald Driver.
So when you come here, you drive?
Yes.
Your car got seatbelts?
Yeah.
You wear them?
No.
Okay, but why not?
I don't want to.
But do you know you can get a ticket for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give you a ticket. Bet you wish you buckle up now.
Oh my God.
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Take it, click it. There we go.
Click it or ticket.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways. Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
As seasons change and years fly by, one thing remains consistent: Old Dutch. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Upper Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or simply treating yourself, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Welcome back. It's time to rejoin Masters of Mystery.
There was one recent case that kind of crossed between the two. I'm particularly good at skip traces, which is where you're finding people who don't want to be found. I recently found one guy who some lawyer came to us and said, I can't find this guy. I contacted everybody I could possibly contact. I don't know. He was in jail in New Jersey. I don't know how he got there.
But you found him.
But I found him and he was there. So that was cool to be able to, you know, this attorney who makes much more than I do. I can't find him. There he is. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. One particular case recently where our company was contracted by a woman who believed that a loved one had been murdered, but the case had been closed. It had been ruled accidental, but she was very, very adamant that no, that's not the case. She couldn't really come to the police about it because the body had been very quickly cremated. So there was really nothing they could do. And so she came to us and was like, can you help? And Brad, who's my field leader, looked at me and was like, okay, we can try. But there's not really a whole lot.
Did you find out was the person murdered? And did you have all the clues?
All I can say is that the case was reopened by the end of the things that we found.
See?
Okay. So, yeah.
And this, we were talking at dinner about writing a series, and you said you would be open to writing a series. And I feel like this is it, don't you? The mom PI?
I would love it. I'm going to be honest. This character that I've written that I hope someone else or some editor loves as much as I do, it also fell into being a PI the way that I did. And mostly it's because a teacher at her kid's school went missing.
Oh my gosh, it could be me.
It could be you. I should change her name immediately. No, I was obsessed when my kids were little. We're obsessed with the book Mrs. Nelson is Missing.
Yeah.
So the teacher is Mrs. Nelson, obviously. Okay. I liked following her as she kind of stumbled through the same path that I did.
Yeah.
We're just trying to be a mom and trying to deal with her husband, who's a complete jerk.
Sorry, because Crystal.
She's my wife, not my husband.
Okay.
There's a difference. But she's trying to figure out what to do with her life. And then this teacher goes missing and her son is implicated for stupid reasons, she thinks. And also her best friend's ex-wife is the cop investigating and is like pointing the finger at her son. And she's like, excuse you, we had Memorial Day barbecues together. There's a code. I feel like you should just look the other way. And she works really hard to try and clear her son's name. And she, you know, finds things about herself through it that she's like, she discovers that she's smart and she's capable and she knows how to find things. Like, being a mom has given her superpowers where she can find anything or anyone. She knows immediately when someone's lying to her. She has all of these skills that make her a fantastic PI that she never would have considered before, until the end when she gets a note from another mom who's like, hey, I heard what you did. I think my husband might be cheating on me.
Yes, I'm here for it. I hope it gets published ASAP.
I hope. That's been sent last week. So okay. If I don't know what kind of vibes everyone is into, but positive ones my way would be awesome.
Okay, I'll ask you one more question and then we can open it up for some other people because I'm sure people want to know things. But I do want to know, like, do your wife and kids read your books and what do they think about them?
As my children have gotten older, they're 18 and 17 now, I offered them to read my books. It sat on a table untouched for months, I would say.
Same.
Yeah. My wife listens to the audiobook. She's not a super big book person, but she is very considerate that way. And also, I think she just wants to know a little bit what parts of her are in the book and see if she can ID them. I will say, in my second book, Graveyard of Lost Children, there is a word-for-word argument we've had for about 3 pages.
Oh, my gosh. But I also really liked this part of your acknowledgments where you say, thank you to my wife, Crystal, for a lot of things, but especially for allowing me to tie your hands together and watch you try to escape.
So I am a visual learner. I needed to know if it could be done in the way that I had imagined. So I said, can you come in the kitchen, please? I need some help.
Yeah.
And she gamely did. She did not escape. But
I love
that's okay.
That.
We figured it out. It was good.
Okay. Well, as you can see, Katrina is a delight and super smart. So let's open it up to some questions for her.
That's very kind.
Does the book about the woman who's trying to be a private investigator and clear her son, does it have a name? So if we were looking for it?
It's not published yet. It hasn't even been picked up by an editor yet. That one is hopefully going to be called Ignorance is Bliss. I'm imagining a series where Bliss is used in the titles of all the books because her name is Natalie Bliss. So,
oh, I love it. This is perfect. Yes.
You will see. I will take letters of recommendation from all of you that I can send on to this editor. So she knows she has, how many people are here? 60? 60
yeah,
sales?
At least we sold 60 copies.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Interested in your choice of point of view for the book. And whatever your point of view is, I want to know if your narrator is reliable.
No. Sorry. They're all,
I will say no
they
words.
All have a really strong relationship with paranoia.
Yeah. So I purposefully chose multiple third person past point of views. I really enjoy books that have multiple points of view because I like getting the story from different angles. It's especially useful, I think, in mystery and horror novels because then it gives you a little more of what is going on, really, who's telling me the truth. I would say none of them are reliable.
Yeah, but all of them have, like, a really strong emotional truth that resonates. But their relationship with, like, fact is not strong.
Not a one.
No.
What's fact, really? Yeah. I mean.
Michael.
Kathleen, I'm just curious, what brought you to mystery then?
Oh, my gosh.
After not writing mystery, what made this one be the story that you had to tell that way?
Oh, thanks for asking. So I wrote, what did you say?
Money.
I wish. My first three books are all kind of about suburban motherhood, and I had been teaching school. My first book is about Edina High School called Something Else, and I was teaching there and wrote about it. Yes, seriously. And then I wrote another book about motherhood related to adoption, which I was interested in. And then I wrote another book about motherhood related to youth sports, which I was really interested in. And then I just didn't have anything else to say about motherhood. so I felt like I had done it. And I'm a lifelong mystery reader. I probably read more mystery and thriller novels than anything else. And I love the genres. And so I really wanted to try my hand at it. And I came up with some ideas that were pretty dark at first. And my publisher was like, well, this doesn't seem like a Kathleen West novel. And I was like, oh,
that's
well,
the
shoot.
Point.
Yes. One of them, we're in Mendota, Minnesota, and I went to Visitation School, which is up the hill here, an all-girls Catholic school. And I'd been teaching there for 3 years. So one of my ideas was about a nun who saved the blood of student council presidents in her rosary beads, which was a little bit dark.
Yoink.
Yeah. So that one got rejected. And they...
That sounds amazing.
I know, right? Someday. But they said, how about a little light murder? And I was like, okay, like, so...
So, like, only, like, poking the knife in a little bit? Like,
right. So that's kind of how I got started on this path. It's a book about six women, all with the same common name. It's Sarah Jones. They work together to solve the mystery of another Sarah Jones that's found dead in town. And I have a really common name and frequently get emails for other Kathleen Wests. So that's how the idea came about. Yeah.
I can attest. It's a really great book.
Yeah, we treat it. It's coming out June 10th, and I gave Katrina one early. So
yeah. It is really enjoyable. It's one of those mysteries that I don't think it's murder light at all.
Well, there is like a pretty big kidnapping case in there that's not very light.
Pretty well, even the murder is pretty vicious.
Well, she's dead.
Yeah. I feel like that's a prerequisite.
Yeah, she fell off. I mean, she goes off a bridge. I was thinking about it in here because as I was writing it, I really felt a lot of empathy for the murderer. And I was wondering if that's normal.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So.
See, it just goes back to what I said, that's what makes a really great book is if you're not rooting a little bit for the murderer, just like a little bit in your deepest, darkest little heart, then is it really any good?
I went for a walk. That's what I do. Like if I can't think of something, I'll go for a walk. And one of my favorite PIs, fictional PIs, my friend who came with me tonight, we're obsessed with the Maisie Dobbs series. Have you read Maisie Dobbs? Okay. So she always says like move the body to move the mind. So I go for my little walk and I'm thinking like, oh gosh, this character has sacrificed everything for her brother, the murderer. And she's like really devoted to her family. And then I'm like, but she killed someone. So I wasn't quite like her. But yeah.
It's fine.
Any other questions? Well, then I will ask the last one.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. And this is for you, Katrina.
Okay.
The book titles, the last two book titles, no, the first two book titles, no, last two book titles, which I had written down, but I left my paper up there.
That's right.
They are both creepy.
Yeah.
And they both refer to doing away with children.
Uh-huh.
And you explained that you didn't have anything to do with the one book title. But my question is this just some Minnesota passive-aggressive way to deal with your own children?
Because there are dead children in this book, too. Not in the title, but in the book.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not originally from Minnesota.
She's from Florida.
I'm from Florida.
Oh,
so I'm full on aggressive. There's nothing passive about it. No, I wrote these books as, you know, a mom of kids growing up and they were annoying. So,
but they're both alive.
They're both alive and well, and they love me very much.
Yeah.
Not coerced at all.
Can we get proof of that?
Cannot confirm nor deny.
Anybody else? Nope. And let's then give these two lovely ladies a great round of applause.
Thank you very much.
And Devin just showed up just in time with the books.
Devin, so, my favorite person tonight.
please come back next month. Don't forget to make your reservations online to see Brian Luderman and Christopher Vallon. And until we see you next time, take time to read a good book and hug your kids. Good night, everyone.
Don't kill them.
Don't kill them.
Oh, my gosh. You were great.
Thank you. You were, too. That was great. That was awesome.
Okay, good.
That's all for tonight, folks. Thanks for joining Masters of Mystery, and please come back next month as we once again converse with some of the world's most celebrated mystery writers in our quest to understand the minds behind the murders. In the meantime, please support your local bookstores, and in particular, buy the books of these authors who have entertained us tonight. Until next time, take the time to hug your kids and read a good book. This is Rob Young signing off.
It's no mystery where you find the best munchies. It's under the Old Dutch windmill at your favorite snack store. For over 90 years, Old Dutch Foods has proudly delivered taste sensations to families throughout the Midwest. Old Dutch is a Minnesota-made, family-owned company committed to quality and flavor that brings everyone together. Whether you're enjoying a gathering with loved ones or reading your favorite mystery, Old Dutch snacks make every moment special. Join us in celebrating the flavors that have delighted loyal fans for generations. Old Dutch. Quality lives here.
Now, as the fog drifts over the moors and cobblestones gleam under the rain-washed lamplight, our guest authors take their final bows. The riddles have been unraveled. The cases are closed. The curtain falls. This has been Masters of Mystery. brought to you by Old Dutch Foods. Signing off until next month, when we will once again dissect the minds behind the murders. Good night and pleasant dreams.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Law enforcement helicopters with heat-seeking technology are flying over the mountains near the city of Coeur d'Alene in northern Idaho. The choppers, along with police, the FBI, and ATF agents on the ground, are searching for the shooter or shooters who killed two firefighters in an apparent ambush as they responded to a fire this afternoon. Coonte County Sheriff Robert Norris.
We now have two deaths. We have an unknown amount of casualties. We still have civilians that are coming off of that mountain. We might have civilians that are stuck or in shock on that mountain.
It's been a long weekend of negotiations in the Senate over President Trump's budget bill. Republican leaders are racing to pass it, get it back to the House for final approval, and then to the president to sign by July 4th. Most Republicans support it. All Democrats oppose it, including Illinois' Dick Durbin.